Shoes in the shoe shop for the big canvas. It's always a big thing. Nobody's done that. You know, thick rubber soles on the shoes.
Yeah, and there was one in, and Kenny always went to the one in, what's the Mayo footballer?
We better kick it off.
I think it's good for democracy.
I'd like to see the greener issues.
The issues would be for the homeless and the farmers.
Well, they have done something, but they haven't done enough.
There's a few of them need to be turfed out, I think.
It's Wednesday, January the 22nd. You're listening to the Election 2020 Your Politics podcast. I'm Colm O'Mungo, and either myself or Áine Lawlor will be counting the kiss babies, slap backs and knock doors between now and polling day on Saturday, February 8th. Today, Fine Gael set out its policies on supporting rural Ireland. Fianna Fáil published proposals on reforming personal taxation. Sinn Féin was looking at its plans to assist workers and families. Labour was focusing on the rental sector. People Before Profit launched its manifesto. Social Democrats want pension reforms. The Greens were out and about in Meath and Westmeath. We're joined today by political reporter Mary Regan and political correspondents Paul Cunningham and Micheál Lehane. It should be pointed out that today is double deadline day, double D day. Candidate nomination deadline is there today. So the great truth, the number of candidates, all will be revealed.
You should get them out. I think it's around later on this afternoon, but the approximate number was going to be 450 candidates.
For 160 seats.
159.
We have one in
the
three.
Cam Corlea, Rich Byrne. Yeah.
So, but it will be confirmed. And then the candidates have what's known as the cooling off period, 24 hours in which they're able to scratch their chin and say, do I really want to go out onto the hustings, pushing leaflets through doors and try and get myself elected?
Also known as the period in which a candidate's family tries to beg, implore and beseech them not to do it again in some cases. So Micheál, who's gone?
Tommy Bruin was the big name today who announced that he wasn't going. He said he was still contemplating whether or not to change his mind, having initially made the decision earlier in the morning that coming right up to the deadline, he was considering changing his mind and getting back in there. He's nearly been three decades in the Dáil, some of it in the Labour Party, some of it as an independent. But it was a difficult decision to make. Again, it's another one of the urban independents, well-known, high-profile figures who aren't contesting this election. And this is something that seems to be emerging, that rural seated independents who were members of the last Dáil seem to be more confident.
Finian McGrath gone as well.
Maureen O'Sullivan, Finian McGrath, then in Waterford, John Halligan. There seems to be a view that the rural independent is perhaps in a better position to contest this election. We know from the opinion polls, the independents somewhere around 10-11%. That's the support they're looking at. Yeah, suggested.
Suggested indeed. Yeah. Caveat. Yeah.
That was a surprise, though, a big name, and it opens up that constituency.
Yeah, what does it do? Where does Finian McGrath started life in the Irish Republican Socialist Party, then went on to become an independent, may have been picking up a Gregory vote, may have been picking up a personal vote. Tommy Bruin, as you say, Labour Party, the anti-coalition voice or anti-Fine Gael coalition voice, the left Labour Party, and then he left the Labour Party. Mary, what does this do to a constituency like that?
Well, I mean, it throws it wide open because out of five seats, you now have two up for grabs. They're two left-leaning seats traditionally. So you'd kind of think that. And remember, in the last general election, this was the group of death. It had 20 candidates, some of them very high profile. April Power last time around as well. And I think it was the 15th count last time around when Finian McGrath got in ahead of Éan O'Riordan of the Labour Party. Dramatic scenes in the Count Centre. So a lot of the focus today will be on Labour's Éan O'Riordan saying, you know, out of the five seats there, two are freed up and he'd have to fancy his chances. But it has to be said that geography also plays a role here as much as ideology or anything else. And, you know, this Dublin Bay North is two old constituencies almost together. And Tommy Bruin would have come from the old Dublin northeast constituency. He's from Howth. So there's a lot of focus now on the Green Party candidate, David Healy. He's also from Howth. And he came in the local elections on the first count with more than 3,400 first preference votes. So if it's geography at play, you'd imagine him picking up a lot of Tommy Bruin's seats. And Éan potentially picking up Finian McGrath's seats. So there's going to be a lot of transfers at play.
Callan is Howth as well, and suddenly
Social
now,
Democrat,
Social Democrat candidate, being the Howth-based one.
Background in student politics.
Yeah, and would have been part of that group in what was Democratic Left that went into the Labour Party and now.
Yeah, and he would have also been associated in that sense with Tommy Bruin in the past in terms of canvassing and all that.
I mean, David Heath is interesting because he's been there, like, this is about his fourth or fifth time going. So he's been around a long time.
And is that a sufficiently fractured constituency for this to be people looking to secure one seat, or is anybody looking to pick up a second seat?
Well, Fianna Fáil, is there a possibility? Deirdre Heaney's been around a long time as well with Sean Haughey, possibility there. Catherine Noone is someone who is Richard Bruton's running mate, of course, ran in Dublin West before, so has been parachuted in, but has been there for some time now. But the second seat option, Fianna Fáil, on a particularly good day, but that's, maybe it's, you also have to look at the Sinn Féin seat, like coming into this week, Denise Mitchell is someone who said maybe can Sinn Féin hold that. And if you look at the suggested statistics coming off the opinion polls now, well, suddenly that is again looking like a safe Sinn Féin seat.
This could be a bellwether in that sense. I mean, whatever way the wind is blowing on the day, if it's behind Fianna Fáil, then Fianna Fáil could easily pick up the seat there, and possibly likewise with the Green Party or Sinn Féin. So it's definitely one to watch in terms of what it might mean, say, for the national picture.
And suddenly the Social Democrats now, as a result of Tommy Bruin's departure, have a possibility, we'll say, if their two TDs are returned, and then if Gary Gannon is in a good position, and now Keane O'Callaghan, well, suddenly that's beginning to have the semblance of a bloc that could be a key cog in government formation talks, if things were to transpire that way.
Any independent there who could claim to be the spiritual heir of Tommy Bruin?
I'm sure lots of people are going to claim it, but I think when it comes to being able to garner the vote, I think that seems to be more unlikely. But one can never rule things out.
Well, there doesn't seem to be, Fianna McGrath's case as well, there's been no one anointed on either front. I mean, given
maybe
that these decisions were late.
Maybe you can't anoint when you're an independent. Yeah. Anoint too much in case it might stand.
Yeah, well, I suppose there was a feeling with Fianna McGrath, was there, that could Damien O'Farrell, who would be the councillor, would have worked closely with him, was there a possibility that he could enter the fray, but that hasn't happened, so...
Yeah,
I think it also shows as well that, you know, when speaking about the urban independence, you know, there is a sense of the Green Party, you know, coming on the back of the local elections, doing very well in Dublin. And if that is the case, then, you know, there's a focus on whether they'll steal Fine Gael's votes, but they'll also be stealing votes that might have traditionally gone to independents or left-wing smaller groupings, you know.
Right. Labour is a left-wing smaller grouping at this stage. Mm-hmm. Mary, you were out at the Labour Party hustings earlier, or the Labour Party event earlier.
Yeah,
what was the subject of that?
Their topic was rent specifically, not housing, but just rent. So this is a 3-week campaign, so parties have to choose a topic every day on which to have their launch.
They're insisting on the legality of the rent freeze. They say Fianna Fáil are wrong on this. Their legal advice is wrong. You can freeze rent, they're saying, because Alan Kelly has done it before. What were they talking about?
Yes, so Fianna Fáil yesterday received its legal advice, legal opinion, which said that the freezing rent would be unconstitutional. That was a lengthy enough legal opinion that they published. Now, Labour is disputing this today. Jan O'Sullivan is saying that she is absolutely certain, and she checked it with her legal people beforehand, that it's not a legal problem relating to this. And she said she's also absolutely certain that it needs to be done. And she's saying that Fianna Fáil's position is coming from an ideological position in relation to this rather than a legal viewpoint. They're also proposing banning this practice, which has existed for many years in this country, of landlords seeking a month's rent as a deposit. So, you know, if you're a student or if you're renting for the first time, you have to pay when you move into a new place 2 months' rent, which is very onerous, in one lot. So they're saying they're going to ban that. And they're also looking at this, you know, this issue of long-term letting solutions, you know, the way people rent places long-term in other European countries. So they want to introduce some long-term rent arrangement where you can get a tenancy for 6 years or 8 years or 10 years rather than something that exists month to month, month to month.
Paul, Fianna Fáil, personal taxation measures. What were they?
Yeah, well,
what jewels were being offered?
It was one
electorate?
Of those cases where there was an audience who all wanted to ask questions about pensions, and there were three Fianna Fáilers standing on the podium wanted to talk about their great tax measures. So they were smart enough, Fianna Fáil, to get their speak out first before the questions inevitably came in to ask them everything about pensions. But I made a quick note on it to make sure that I didn't get it wrong. So one of the things they started to deal with was the question of the universal social charge. And they were proposing to reduce it from 4.5% to 3.5%. It also plans, as in the party, to increase the standard rate of income tax by 3,000 euro for an individual and 6,000 for a couple. And then the party also said it was going to increase the money going into the rainy day fund from 500,000 to 700,000 per year, bringing the fund to 5.2 billion euro by 2025. So what they were trying to say
The costings there and everything, where are they getting it from and what's going to raise the money, or do we yet again have to wait for the manifesto?
Well, the first thing, we were sitting and they began to talk and we hadn't actually seen a press release. Now, Mary's been down to Fianna Fáil as well, and there's been a bit of an issue on the question of how much information they're giving. They did come up with a 3-page release associated with the statement, but before we're actually going to be able to tell where it's all coming from and how it all stitches together, it comes down to the question of when are they going to publish the manifesto. And on that, it's a huge secret. So I cannot reveal to you on the RT Politics podcast
when
Fianna Fáil nor when Fine Gael are going to do it, because it's top secret and no one can know.
Right.
But it's happening this week.
I remember being involved in a students' union campaign, and a rival candidate had a thing called the Big Plan, which he promised not to reveal unless he was elected. So there was all sorts of speculation as to what was in the Big Plan. But it won't be like that, will it? They will reveal it at some point.
They will have to. I think they're playing the slightest advantage is not going to be conceded. And so both parties are eyeing each other, saying, you do it first.
This should be seen, Micheál, in the context, of course, of the leaders' debate of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, the people who are running sufficient candidates to be aspiring Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin. The game of I'll show you mine if you'll show me yours, or we'll try and show each other ours at the same time, seems to be the game here, possibly.
Yeah, and that's been the way now since the beginning, early days of last week. So then does it come down to the leadership debates and the canvassing? So, I mean, the leadership debate tonight, that's going to be key. At least we think that's going to be key, even though have a lot of people, some canvassers will tell you they're going to doors and there's politeness, and this is coming from across the parties, and they've beginning to get a sense that people have made their minds up.
Because for people watching this now being around 4 o'clock on Wednesday, but for people who are listening later, we're going to be talking to Fran McNulty, who's been following Micheál Martin, and Vincent Kearney, who's been following Leo Varadkar, and we'll hear what the response is like. But that does tell you what they're saying. People are being polite, with very few exceptions.
Yeah, which of course is one of the most dangerous things possible that a political party can pick up on. I mean, are they being polite for Fine Gael because they have made their minds up a certain opinion? If you look at the Irish Times poll today and that appetite for change that is being suggested again in that particular poll, from Fianna Fáil's point of view, they say it's polite too, but is it worrying that that kind of momentum and energy that the party was talking about last week, they may not quite be feeling that yet? So it's a difficult one to read. It makes the debate more important. I suppose, what are you going to get in that debate tonight? You essentially are going to come down to the fact of that Fine Gael have been in government for quite some time. Leo Varadkar will put forward a whole list of things that are going to be done soon and defend the record. Micheál Martin said, but why didn't you do it up to now? Then you're going to come back to the charge, but you were part of that government that let the Troika come in, and Micheál Martin is going to counter that by saying, we provided responsible leadership from the opposition benches by agreeing to confidence and supply for the last 4 years.
Or you never made that suggestion, a red line, when we were talking about
I'm just thinking that I don't actually have to watch the debate now. The points have been laid out and laid bare.
But it's how that's done, isn't it? And it's as much the tone and how they strike that. And as I said yesterday, I mean, there's a danger of Micheál Martin becoming haughty. There's a danger of him becoming defensive about that stuff. Equally, there is the danger from Leo Varadkar's point of view of becoming too niggly, becoming drifting into a comment that he shouldn't do, that he has a tendency to do, and becoming acerbic and bitter. So all that, even though I still think this being the first debate, and they're both competent performers, as we can see consistently in the Dáil, this will be a scoreless draw.
Scoreless draw. Mary, there is another battle.
Yeah.
And that's between the leaders' debate tonight and other programming that's on.
Well, I think it's up against Operation Transformation.
Okay.
And also, I think Virgin Media have to move Love Island onto another channel to make way for the Micheál Martin-Leo show. So I don't know if we can draw any comparisons about what might happen there, but
Operation Transformation, of course, a program that wasn't beneficial to Leo Varadkar over the last year, when it kind of revealed his metabolic age to be significantly higher than he might have thought. Could that have a bearing on people, how they're going to vote?
there will be people out on the canvas. Could we suggest maybe setting up a treadmill in the living room and watching the leaders debate, possibly?
Do you remember that? Do you remember the Taoiseach's age?
Was
higher.
It was 52, was it?
Yeah.
Something that...
People are counting steps as well. Another operation transformation thing, people on the canvas thread are counting steps. And there's a Labour candidate in Cork today saying after the first canvas, they were already up to 13,000 steps. Then that's something that was spoken about in relation to canvassing in the past.
The Fitbitization of politics. Yes.
And you also see candidates tweeting about, you know, in the ad break in Operation Transformation, they go to, you know, a local town square or something and they're all doing jumping jacks or exercises. You see, this is something candidates are tweeting that they're delighted to be attending this couple of minute exercise amongst their people.
The recent UK election.
Yes.
The Prime Minister, aspiring Prime Minister and later Prime Minister Boris Johnson came out with what was a very Irish signal beforehand, was he was off the jar for the duration of the election campaign. There are a number of cases that get you off the jar in Ireland. There is religious observance, Holy Souls in November or Lent, if you're a Roman Catholic. There is critical medical conditions requiring antibiotics. Mm. And then there is running for public office. Mm-hmm. They are the conditions under which people swear off the jar. We haven't heard anybody making it known that they are off the jar until votes.
No, but they do. They very much do.
Yeah.
Politicians will all, when they sort of exchange advice on how to survive 3 weeks in an election campaign, it usually features number one in the list, actually.
But even if you take, like, we're doing this in Leinster House, the whole idea association between politics and late-night drinking is gone. I mean, it is rare to walk into the Doyle Bar and find more than five people there, and they're usually drinking a cup of coffee. Mm. So maybe that's, you know, an historical thing altogether.
Right. But even, do you remember back to 07, PJ Mara had that story of having to go to Fianna Fáil HQ after the election was won or was about to be won when the results were beginning to come in. And so entrenched had become the sense of sobriety. And that was a different time and a different place that he even found it difficult to rally the troops to say that it was over. You could go back. You could go back on the jar.
Another novel thing about this campaign, somebody who aspires to be Taoiseach taking money out of their pocket and paying for something themselves. Leo Varadkar bought buns for himself and his team yesterday. Go back to the Bertie Ahern era, where there would be a pat of the pockets.
He had when he was buying his lotto ticket to try and win the millions, he used his plastic. But when he was buying the buns, he was using cash.
50 euro note, though. I can't imagine if you're selling iced buns down at the local market that you have changed 50 euro.
He didn't just buy the currenty bun, or was it the cherry on top? He also bought a couple of brownies, as he said, for the lads.
For the lads, for the team. By the way, pensions. Before we leave it, there is now a row over who owns the pension issue. Richard Boyd Barrett, People for Profit, who's saying that his group offers a true alternative to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, saying that there are Johnny-come-latelys to the pension issue. They'd called for a restoration to the pension age to 65 in every budget. And Paul Murphy, also of the similar grouping, Rise within the Solidarity People Before Profit group, seeking to put pressure on Sinn Féin about entering coalition with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. That Sinn Féin is presumably the target of that Johnny Come Lately's remark from People Before Profit.
There's two things to say there. One was that there was a manifesto of People Before Profit, of which Paul Murphy of Rise was also in attendance. And there had been some rumour that maybe Solidarity, part of that, Dáil Group, was also going to be part of that manifesto launch, but it didn't happen. So we still haven't found out exactly what happened there. I think you're absolutely right when it comes to pointing the finger at Sinn Féin, but Sinn Féin will just respond. They are the people who raised the flag in this election campaign first and have garnered some of the support coming from it. When it comes to Fianna Fáil, as I mentioned earlier on, Michael McGrath, Barry Cowan being asked about pensions and pensions and pensions, and they tried to do a hop, skip, jump. The first thing was to say that they're instituting this a review of pensions. So that meant, number two, that the age of pensions will not increase from 66 to 67 next year, because they'd have to wait the outcome of the review. And then the third thing was that what it meant was that they were going to ensure that there was this sort of additional payment before you got the full pension. So that would sort of ensure that there wasn't any balance there. And Mr. McGrath was pressed on the question of what's the point in hiring or increasing the age of the pension if you're then going to give this supplemental pension until you reach pension age? Like, how much money are you actually going to save? And he said it was a very good question, but that this was just, I'm glad you asked me that, but it was an intermediate step to take account until they concluded the review, at which time they would be able to answer that question effectively.
Okay.
So it had a big park.
Well, but before
there are two things going on here.
But just before you go to that, because Sinn Féin has said it would pay for its proposals to bring the pension age back to 65. It would use the surplus in the social insurance fund and increase in employers' PRSI to restore that to 65.
Yeah, I mean, Fine Gael seem to think if they put a serious plan in place around the transitional arrangement that that would be sufficient, and you're ultimately moving to 68 anyway. Fianna Fáil seem to be somewhere in that territory as well. But if you listen to people ringing in to radio stations up and down the country today, particularly teachers, they don't have a desire to work past 65. It's the more fundamental point. It's not about finding your way through old contract law that will allow you somehow to get to 68. That there's a big difference here, and that is something that the parties are probably going to be explaining for the next few days.
Spare a thought for our colleague Ingrid Miley, who has been telling all of our colleagues for many the long year that pensions is a big story, and now she's been unexpectedly hit with a tsunami of interest in this topic.
But isn't it the thing about people is that they don't plan, and so you tend to think you start off your pension, then you forget about it, and then sometime around 62 you wake up and say, Janie Mac, I should have a look at some of that literature which I file away every year but never actually examine.
Mary, pensions is something everybody is talking about. As we'll hear from Vincent Kearney in a moment, for anyone who's listening on the listening end of the podcast, something that nobody is talking about is Brexit, but it's something Fine Gael want to talk about.
And actually, just back to the pension issue for a minute, I would say that who would have thought that something that was a condition of the bailout troika to increase the pension age, here we are 3 elections later and the reverberations of that troika, or of that bailout, are still being felt in an Irish election. Brexit, yeah, I mean, this was Fine Gael's trump card, you know, how they handled the whole Brexit issue. This was something that they thought was their strongest point against their opponents, and it now seems that it's not emerging as an election issue in the way that, you know, they had maybe hoped or expected. You know, would be, I got some Fine Gael literature in my own door last night, and Brexit is top and central off that. But according to the Irish Times poll on the issues, just 3% of respondents to that particular poll said Brexit was their issue on which they'd be voting.
In the last week, though, could it become part of the bigger issue, which is all of the policy proposals that will cost money have to be paid for by a performing economy? And then it becomes an argument about who's going to keep the economy performing the way it's performing, or facilitate the policies that will do that. And could Brexit be more of an issue then?
I think it's banked. So the answer to your question is no. I don't see it happening that way. I just think that certainly Fine Gael is hoping that would be how the electorate would see it. Fianna Fáil is going to argue extremely hard that, you know, Brexit isn't anyone's. It's a collective, and they're equally fiscally prudent. And it's one of the big points that Micheál Martin's going to be bringing up in this debate, how fantastically prudent they were as opposition. They were the people who were holding Fine Gael back. But one small point insofar as from the Fine Gael perspective was that our correspondent, Vincent Kearney, not Kearney, by the way, was sent out a tweet talking about how he travelled through 6 or 7 counties.
He hasn't heard it once.
Hasn't heard it once. And in the past couple of minutes, Simon Coveney replied to him saying that he's heard it every single day.
OK, well, on that, let's hear what RTE's people on the canvassing trail have heard. What are the party leaders who are going to be involved in that party leaders debate, Leo Varadkar of Fine Gael and Micheál Martin of Fianna Fáil, hearing out and about on the canvas trail? We've been talking to Vincent Kearney, who's following Leo Varadkar, and Fran McNulty, who's been following Micheál Martin. Let's hear from Vincent Kearney first. If you're having a good election.
So far, tiring. Lots of 540 kilometres yesterday between the cameraman and myself. It was a long, long day.
What's the mood like?
The mood has been, it's changed actually since we first started. Last week, the first couple of days, as you'd expect, maybe a little more formal, a little more organised in terms of the canvas and the visits. As the campaign has gone on, Leo Varadkar has appeared certainly a bit more relaxed. Normally speaking, they'll go to the constituency office of a local party candidate. And then the way the canvas will start off is the local candidate will bring them to people that he or she knows in the local area. So again, in the initial stages, they tend to meet people who support the party. And that's where you a little bit of jeopardy coming into it.
Right, so what kind of a greeting is he getting from people who are ostensibly middle of the road as opposed to plants?
Well put. So far, actually, quite well. Everything's quite polite. Quite a bit of smiles and, as I say, handshakes, even with those who don't really believe what he's doing or support him. But there have been a lot of challenges on a wide range of issues. You know, crime has come up a number of times. The very thorny issue of pensions that, of course, has jumped right to the forefront in this election campaign. Health, housing, homelessness, childcare, teachers' pay. There was an example of County Limerick. He went into a local shop. A local woman, Mary O'Donoghue, was very engaging, was smiles, shook hands. And just as Leo Varadkar was prepared to walk away, she then challenged him on health. She told him her husband had spent 8 days lying on a trolley at University Hospital in Limerick. And she went off on quite a critique about the hospital, about the health service and the need to reform it. A woman beside her then engaged in a conversation. She raised concerns about teachers' pay. She also said the government needs to do much more to try to promote the Irish language through schools. So a number of occasions where a planned canvas was in danger of going wrong. But as I said, they were very polite challenges. There were no angry voices. It was done in a very conversational way. And Leo Varadkar responded in kind. He smiled, he nodded, he agreed with some of the points that were made. The points that he didn't agree with, he outlined why he didn't agree with them and stood by government policy.
Right, and the extraction process or the exit strategy from a difficult situation, is it handlers moving a party leader on, or is it a polite finishing of the conversation by the candidate themselves?
So far it's been by and large a polite ending of the conversation by the candidate themselves. Now in Offaly on Friday in Birr, Leo Varadkar again arrived for a canvas. It started off very, very well. Just as the canvas was about to start, a bride came out of her wedding in a local hotel, came over, of course, this was a journalist's dream, as you know, asked Taoiseach any chance of a photograph. He said, yes, of course, any chance of a hug. So he duly obliged, he stood, he posed for photographs. He then stopped outside a shop with a woman who wanted to speak to him. Now, he wanted to speak about Brexit. She didn't. She wanted to speak about the health service, and she wasn't letting go. She made clear that her daughter is a nurse. She criticised waiting times, the general state of the health service, pay levels, and she went on, and she went on, and she went on. Leo Varadkar throughout stood nodding and smiling. His handlers at that point were getting a little bit concerned and clearly wanted to move him on. Just as they were about to do so, Colm, another gentleman then entered the conversation, and he wanted to raise the issue of mental health and mental health awareness and mental health assistance for those people who are suffering. Now, clearly, it's a very sensitive issue, so you couldn't break off from that. So Leo Varadkar let him say his piece. It took him some time to do so, and smiled and walked on. So we say, so far, we haven't witnessed any of the handlers moving in and physically moving them along. So far, it has been the tactic has been let the conversation take place and then walk on. But one point, Colm, that is worth raising is that there's a conversation that Leo Varadkar himself clearly wants to have, and that's Brexit. He talks about it everywhere he goes. At every canvas, he tells party members and supporters about the importance of Brexit, about securing a good deal, and about the key role that Fine Gael has played so far. But as I said, across so far, counties Dublin, Longford, Louth, Offaly, Tipperary, Cork and Limerick, yet, I've yet to hear one single person on the state say Brexit is an issue for them. Fine Gael are clearly pushing it out there. Leo Varadkar sees this as a big issue. But certainly, when we've been there watching this journalist, not one person has yet raised that and said that is a priority for them.
So that's what Leo Varadkar is hearing. Let's hear now from Fran McNulty, who I spoke to earlier, about what Micheál Martin is getting out on the campaign trail.
They're new shoes, are they?
They have them donkey's ears.
What kind of shoes do you wear on the trail?
Them. I wear them because they're kind of formal, but they're comfy. Rubber sole, warm.
You couldn't be wearing a leather sole.
Oh, no, you'd be frozen,
trail.
Yeah.
Right, okay. How's it going anyway? What's the mood like?
In Fianna Fáil, I think there's a mood of confidence. They're very, you know, cautious about that confidence. We saw that when the weekend opinion poll came out. The first thing Micheál Martin did was rubbish it. And in fact, the day afterwards said, I don't believe that poll, when he was on Ocean FM down in Sligo. He was very blunt about it and uttered the prediction, which every leader would, it's not going to be as good as that. And when the second poll came out in the Irish Times, sure enough, it wasn't. And that's what he needs, is that kind of caution around it.
There was a bit of a smirk there when you were asking about it down in Longford. I was saying in one of the last podcasts, you know, he does that thing where there's the serious voice, but you can see the smirk twitching at the corners of his mouth.
No, he does that. And you can see that this is a man who knows this is his last chance to become Taoiseach. And therefore, when he talks about policy, he gets very serious. There is, you don't see those smirks.
And is there much of it on the street? Like, what kind of a greeting is he getting? Is there Howie Mihal, keep going, fast canvas? Or are there people stopping him saying, come here, I want to talk to you? And policy engagement from people, as far as you can see, who aren't plants.
Yes, and that is the one thing about being on the campaign trail. I'll say this, he is ferociously fast. He moves at a rate of knots. It happened in Drogheda, where we went into one furniture store. There weren't many people in the store. He decided he wasn't going to waste his time in the furniture store. So he bounced on, left the candidate in the furniture store. By the time the candidate had caught up, he had canvassed 4 to 5 shops down the street. And it is that, get in. Hello, I'm Mihal. That's the first thing he says to everybody he meets. And quite apart from, as you say, the plants, they will call to shops they know are Fianna Fáil friendly. That's just the way it works. Okay, because yeah, the media are following them. But you do meet people in the street who want to pass by very quickly and politely. And Irish people have this thing where, you know, they may have an issue with you, but they won't say it to your face. And there is a sense of that in the campaign, that even though people might have a slight problem with Fianna Fáil or the past, they engage kind of positively and warmly. But there are those people who will question. It's not a line. People are genuinely saying, what are you going to do about housing? Where are you at on crime? What he's doing a lot is listening. And you can see it when he's with people. We were in Longford this week, and he went to the local convent, the girls' secondary school. And he went into a Leaving Cert class. And politicians like to speak. We all know politicians like to speak. And he did speak, but he listened. And we were walking out of the school, and they were really impressive, a bunch of girls who were really on topic, knew what they wanted to know, could mention other parties' policies and ask how Fianna Fáil were going to respond. And we're walking out, and I said, good debate prep. And he turned and he said, like no other. So he understands the value of listening to people. And I think he understands the value of people feeling that they are being listened to as well. And I think that Fianna Fáil have tapped into that in this campaign. There is a feeling out there amongst people generally that they're not being listened to by politicians. And you can really get the sense with Fianna Fáil and with Micheál Martin in particular, he's keen to do that. Very often, if there's a moment of silence or if somebody's speaking to him on the doorstep, the candidate jumps in to say something very sage about the constituency. Oh, well, yes, of course. Yeah, we built that bridge and we got those streetlights done. And he just turns and looks at them, you know, in that kind of...
You're interrupting here.
Let it go. You know, this person is engaging here. You don't, you know, there is, you will sell yourself, but you need to listen.
And what about the challenges? Are we hearing anything about the Troika, bankruptcy, economic ruin, any of these things? The charges that no doubt will be thrown at him later on tonight by Leo Varadkar when it comes to the debate.
That's the thing that surprised me, that you would expect that level of anger about what's happening. I mean, some, a smart-ass hack made this remark when we couldn't get answers in one town. No doors were being answered at houses because it was the middle of the day. One hack turned around and said they're all out busy paying for their negative equity. And it, you know, it was a moment of tension in the group of party hacks that were there with journalists. But people aren't saying it. They'll say it from a van passing by as they roar out the window. But they're not saying it face to face.
Where have you been hitting because, you know, There are places where they have seats, they want a second seat. There are places where they have seats that they need to hold on to. There are places where they have no seats, that they want to get seats. So where has the focus been?
There's been a bit of concentration in Dublin in the early part of last week. We were in Longford yesterday. That's a key ground for them. They have Robert Troy in Westmeath, given that Albert Reynolds was Taoiseach and from there, to get a TD for Longford, number one in the party, but to get two seats. And we've been up in Drogheda as well. They're looking at Louth. There's been a tough ask. South Leitrim as well, candidate there. A really tough ask. Marion Harkin entering the pitch there again, kind of been a bit of a cat amongst the pigeons for Fianna Fáil there. Later this week, we're heading for Limerick. What tends to happen is he makes his way back towards Cork for the weekend. So he'll canvass Dublin, do a bit of the Midlands, then make his way south and then back up to Dublin again. As well, he's come in for some criticism for not being at the daily briefings which the party holds. He's been told he's on the run. He's afraid to stand behind his policies in front of the media in Dublin. His answer, a quick answer to that yesterday was, I actually have a team I trust. And I trust them. I trust my front bench team to go in and present my policies. I'll get out on the stump. I'll help the candidates in the various constituencies. and I'll canvass the country. And that's what he's doing.
Finally, the shortest lived candidate in the history of this campaign probably is Eddie Ryan in Limerick, added to the Fianna Fáil ticket yesterday morning. That's to join Niall Collins in what used to be the old Limerick West, but is now the constituency of Limerick. But had a think about it and thought the time was too short to mount a serious canvas and campaigns, so he withdrew. So it's Councillor Michael Collins now has been added to the ticket.
Right.
Just closed the nominations there. So that was the shortest person.
Eddie cooled off before the cooling off period.
Exactly.
All right. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it on the usual platforms. The platform's your choice. You can get us on the RTÉ News website. But for me, Colm O'Mungon, for Mary Regan, political reporter, from political correspondents Micheál Lehane and Paul Cunningham, that's all from us today. We're back tomorrow.